Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, ten.
I thought JB and Luca and those guys did a really good job of understanding when we were in the bonus. And so I think we're being taught by one of the best point guards ever on the other side of how to do things. And that's pretty cool this time of the year.
Welcome to the NBA Daily Ding on the Athletic NBA Show.
Ding, ding.
How about we can just watch basketball?
I like that idea.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Ding on the Athletic NBA Show. I'm Dave Dufour here with Keith Parrish for your weekend update. Before we start, don't forget you can get this podcast without ads by subscribing at theathletic.com/NBA Show. Keith, big weekend in the NBA playoffs, and you know what they say. There's no place like home. All home teams won their games this weekend. Keith, the Memphis Grizzlies, your Memphis Grizzlies, the only team to lose a game at home in the second round so far. What's that like?
Oh, that hadn't even occurred to me. It's not enough that Ja Morant's probably out for game four. You should let me know we're the only higher seed to lose a home game, or only team period to lose a home game. This is horrifying. Even worse, it felt like Grizzlies had joined like the marquee night of the NBA. Everyone was fired up. The day when it was, hey, we got a Warriors-Grizzlies game, we got a Bucks-Celtics game, let's go. And then all of a sudden on Sunday, you got the Mavericks taking care of business. You got the 76ers taking care of business. Suddenly, is this the good day? Is this the good day of playoffs? I don't know. Yeah, it was a wild weekend. And as we enter this coming week, now it feels like a lot of these series have new life and are very exciting. Maybe the only one that doesn't have new life is, of course, the Grizzlies series.
Yeah, well, we're going to start with the Dallas Mavericks breathing new life into their own team by picking up two huge wins over the weekend. Obviously, they were down 2-0 on Nurter on Thursday. We declared this series over. Had no chance for the Mavericks. We gave them nothing. And they really showed us, and they showed us by playing defense, Keith. They really have figured out a way to shut down what Phoenix wants to do. Phoenix was 9 of 25 from 3. All this hot shooting that they had from the mid-range, it's disappeared the last couple games, Keith, and it's because Dallas is just defending better.
Yeah, they had a nice defensive rhythm, it felt, in both these games at home. I mean, we knew the Mavericks, like, they were built on defense. They were built on half-court basketball. But those first two games looked so dominant for Phoenix. We were like, oh, this is the team that's been better than everyone all regular season. Maybe we've even been sleeping on them in our predictions for Suns Mavs in the second round. But now as the series shifted back to Dallas, all of a sudden they, you know, in game three, they kind of scratch out a win. And in this one, it's like it's not just the defense. The first half, it was the offense and then the three pointers. They knocked down 20 three pointers in this game on Sunday. I mean, and it's not your normal ones. Luka was only 1 for 10, but Dorian Finney-Smith with a career night with 8 3 pointers. Davis Bertans, who somehow has played 37 career playoff games, he knocks in 4. And the Mavericks have the firepower, you know, to combine with that defense where the Suns just can't match it.
Well, Keith, we got to talk about Chris Paul in this game because that is probably the big storyline. Only 5 points in this game, only 23 minutes, but he did, Keith, have 6 fouls. And I mean, this was pretty incredible for Chris Paul in a playoff game.
The manner in which these fouls occurred honestly should bring back up the whole why in the world do we have foul outs question. Some of them were quite silly. His fourth foul was just tremendously bad luck. He was in there at the end of the first half, tries to tip in his own miss at the buzzer. It's a correct call, but it's also like a borderline call. It's not even a foul. If you think back to the spirit of fouling, like you're making a non-basketball play to try to prevent someone from scoring or having an advantage. No, that was a basketball play. Two guys going for a rebound and they just collided, you know? So like that was bad luck. His fifth foul, I don't know if this is poetic justice or irony. It was the Chris Paul rule, a rule change that was implemented because no one liked watching Chris Paul fall over in the backcourt and draw fouls on defenders. So like he gets called for a foul where after a turnover, everyone's going up court and he veers into Jalen Brunson and causes the contact. Monty Williams feels like because it's his fifth foul, obviously Chris Paul, arguably the most important Suns player, he feels like he has to challenge it and it gets upheld. And so, yeah, Chris Paul, unfortunately, fighting foul trouble. And then his sixth foul. I hate to criticize the referees, Dave.
That is a rough call.
That is a rough one to foul. I'm not saying, you know, okay, you know, some people argue a foul's a foul. You call it no matter who it's on. No, I like my referees to know which important players have five fouls. I like my six fouls to be meaningful and to be purposeful. And that one where Brunson falls over and draws that on an offensive rebound opportunity was very sketchy. And thus Chris Paul fouls out. I know a lot of NBA fan bases are not super pleased with a lot of officiating. Like that's just normal state of being, but I will actually give you permission for the sixth foul. That was a bit of a bad luck.
Yeah, that was a bad one. And after that fourth foul that you mentioned at the buzzer, Chris Paul, he asked Luka if he pushed him that hard. And Luka says, no, but it was a smart play. And I mean, listen, that if you're Chris Paul, you just have to respect that, right? Like this is the league that you've built.
It is, in some sense, the league that a lot of these players have built. They have chosen to decide to fall down a lot and let the referees highly influence the game. Everyone has tacitly agreed this is how we play basketball. Like, no, Luka Doncic did not need to fall over on that rebound. If you're playing pickup, there's no chance a player would fall down in that situation, but you fall down to draw the calls. Chris Paul fell down. He veered into Jalen Brunson trying to manipulate the referees into giving him a whistle. He got repaid on the sixth foul where Brunson falls down on a shot attempt. And these players in every game, basically across the playoffs and all year long, it's just a part of the game now where you try to draw the fouls, get the referees on your side, get the whistles. It isn't the best at all times, and sometimes it backfires on you, and it backfired on Chris Paul today.
Yeah, you live by the flop, and sometimes you die by the flop.
There you go.
Speaking of flopping, Joel Embiid came back on Friday for the Philadelphia 76ers and completely changed this series. They pick up a huge win. They blew out Miami on Friday, Keith, and Embiid was the key to that, and it started on the defensive end. And I think we're going to just talk about these two games together a little bit because we saw a continuation of what we saw in game three and game four, and Embiid was a force.
Well, Embiid's incredible. I mean, he's the whole series. We thought in this Heat Sixer series when the news came out of the broken orbital, it was just a mourning that like, oh, I thought we were going to have a good series and now maybe we're not. And then all of a sudden masked Embiid emerges. He, you know, delivers these games. The Sixers don't have to play DeAndre Jordan anymore. And suddenly we have a series. And then on Sunday you have Embiid, you know, playing well, but like James Harden was monstrous. You know, he made 6 3-pointers. It's only the second time the entire season he's made at least 6 3-pointers in a game, and it was just clutch shot after clutch shot. And also, like, the Miami offense has totally disappeared. And, like, I think the shooting numbers are probably the big story of some of these games where they can't hit anything.
Yeah, again, since Joel Embiid came back, Miami just cannot score. Their half-court offense, which was something we were worried about coming into the playoffs, it just hasn't been able to get going. The only time they've looked decent to me, Keith, is when Kyle Lowry's been out there, which, by the way, he came back with that hamstring issue in game three. He had to leave this game temporarily on Sunday for a little bit. I think he was getting some treatment, came back, finished the game. But that was really the only time they looked good in the half court. Jimmy Butler had a fantastic game, 40 points, 12 of 13 from the free throw line. Bam Adebayo was really good, 21.7 rebounds. But Keith, if you're Miami, you cannot waste a great Jimmy Butler performance like this and a really good Bam Adebayo game when you don't know if you're going to get that sort of production from him if the rest of your offense is clicking.
Well, I mean, Jimmy, in these two games at Philadelphia, Jimmy was amazing. And then yes. It's like, who else is going to help? You said that you thought like the Heat offense looked kind of okay with Lowry out there. But like, I was watching some of these games and I'm thinking, is Lowry okay? Like, I don't know if they should try to pull him and go a different direction just because it seems like he's laboring a bit. The offense isn't there. And especially on Sunday, like, there were some painful moments. There also was moments where he left and I thought he'd injured himself again. Also, by the way, trying to draw fouls. I was worried for him. But like, the Heat just, I think in two games, these two games in Philadelphia as a team, they're shooting 20% from three, 14 for 65. 14 for 65 in these two games. This is an incredible three-point shooting team all season. That was like their bread and butter, that they're a three-point shooting team, and now it's unfortunately abandoned them on these road games. I guess the good news is technically they don't have to win a road game, but like, this is all of a sudden a 2-2 series. It looks like it's going to be a very close match, and just I feel like a few days ago, most Heat fans were like, hey, this is great. No Embiid. Life's good. And now Embiid's here. And if Harden arrives, like, this is, you know, we make fun of James Harden a lot for like having a few postseason foibles. Like, James Harden was amazing in this game. And the Heat actually were getting a little together, I feel like, in the fourth quarter. But every time they cut it into the lead, James Harden was like, hey, you know what? I'm just going to drop another step back three. If you guys are giving Embiid all this attention and I can just cook over here and then we can have, you know, alley-oops thrown to Tobias Harris and Tyrese Maxey can have a good game. Oh, by the way, I know I'm rambling on, Dave. You want to talk about your guy?
I'm not getting out of here without talking about Danny Green.
A great weekend.
Danny Green in those two games, 10 of 13 from three. Some of these, I mean, just sidestep threes, things that people forget that a player like Danny Green can do. But I am going to go back to James Harden because he was pretty amazing. And unlike some of his other performances, this one happened in both halves. Now, he scored zero in the first quarter, and then scored 13 in the second quarter. And we've seen this from him, where he has a nice second quarter and then is just nothing down the stretch. But I felt like he seemed to be gaining momentum as the fourth quarter moved on, Keith. You mentioned hitting those clutch step-back threes. He was also driving to the basket and creating looks for other guys. 9 assists in this game. You mentioned that pass from Tyrese Maxey to Tobias Harris. It was because James Harden had pulled so much defensive attention. They forgot Tobias Harris was even on the court. This was what Philly was envisioning when they traded for Harden.
As far as like the entire Philly roster, I think this one game, and I know Miami just couldn't make any three-pointers, but I felt like the second half, specifically the fourth quarter of this one, it was like the vision of like, this is what the Sixers want to do. And it gave me a vision of like a team I'd been kind of down on where I was like, oh, this makes sense. Maybe it is just as simple as, hey, guess what? James Harden looks like an MVP level player, the type of player that they thought they traded for. Maybe that's all it is. But like, Tobias Harris has had a really solid playoff series. This is a guy who has had some less than stellar playoff performances in his career. But like, we know who Embiid is. He's an MVP type player. And like, if you're getting these other performances of Tobias and Tyrese Maxey combined with James Harden playing, you know, 30 point per game, 9 assists per game, making a bunch of threes, then you're like, oh wow, this is not a sad story anymore. This is like a possible team that can come out.
And again, Embiid is just the difference maker for this team. And the reason why we wrote him off was because we didn't think he was going to play. I mean, taking the concussion, he couldn't look at his phone for days. Just didn't assume he was going to be ready to play for game three, much less game four.
That's actually good for you, Dave.
Well, you know, I'm certain that the time away from his devices helped him lock in for the defense that he had to play against Miami.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Yeah, there you go.
Wait, hold on. How much does it cost if I take Mr. Dan? Is Mr. Dan here? No? Barry, how much does it cost if I say something, a comment about the ref? Is it 20,000? It's a lot of money, eh? So I should not do it. I save my money. I got to pay for diapers.
In Milwaukee, Giannis Antetokounmpo scored 42 points, 12 rebounds, 8 assists, 2 steals, 2 blocks, and led the Bucks to a 2-1 series lead over the Boston Celtics. They win this game 103-101, kind of a wild last minute of the game. There was a fake tip-in by Al Horford. Marcus Smart with a missed free throw where actually there was a lane violation on him that was uncalled. Keith, this is your favorite thing in sports. It's the chaotic final moment.
I love chaos. I love this Bucks Celtics series. I love every uncalled call in this series in these final minutes. I love the controversy. You know, I know like people are going to point to like, all right, the Marcus Smart, was that a 3-shot foul or not? Or should they call it goaltends, or should there have been other fouls called in this game? For me, it was just two heavyweights going head to head. There was that chaotic element. I didn't feel like either team was robbed. I mean, the Celtics were a tenth of a second away from tying this. Al Horford was basically like a superstar this entire game. The missed free throw was perfect as far as I'm concerned. Don't tell me about your last 2-minute report lane violations. Like, I loved it. This was art. This was basketball art. With art, there is imperfection, and I'm okay with that. Also, by the way, you make one of my favorite jokes. Dave, you say you're not going to be happy until they review everything. The ends of these games are sometimes interminable with all the reviews. Like, we don't know whether to celebrate until the referees go over and look at the monitor. I like a little imperfection, and I thought the Celtics-Bucks game, especially the ending. I mean, these are two of the best teams. These are two of the best teams. Either one of these teams could win the title this year. And it coming down to such like razor thin margins from someone who didn't have like a dog in the fight, you know, who's not brokenhearted, whichever way it goes. Yes, perfection, absolute.
And
great
this
art.
Is an old school Eastern Conference slugfest to me. I mean, the offensive defensive rating is 102.5 to 100.5 in this game. And when you have a defense like the Celtics, and a defense like the Bucks, the shots are hard to come by. Both teams just cannot shoot in this series. 9 of 33 from 3 for the Celtics, 9 of 34 from 3 for the Bucks. And you know the Bucks sort of their recipe for success. If you don't make threes, they win. Whether they miss them or not, if you don't make threes, they win because they pack the paint. And the Celtics still can't score inside. Jason Tatum continues to struggle. 10 points in this game, 0 of 6 from 3, 4 of 19 overall. What's going on with Jason Tatum and his shooting?
I think it's not that confusing. I think it's you're playing a great defensive team. They just keep throwing bodies at him. I mean, like, certainly there were opportunities where Jason Tatum is going to make some of those shots, the ones he missed. But, like, I think these are just basically, when it comes to the playoffs, possibly the two best defensive teams. And there aren't that many easy buckets. And you see, you know, like, it's a testament to the Celtics how good they are that they shot under 37% for the game. And, you know, we're a tenth of a second, a split second away from tying the game at the buzzer just on, like, sheer determination and grit.
You mentioned Al Horford having a nice game, 22 points, 16 rebounds, 5 assists. Jaylen Brown continues to just play his tail off, 27 points, 12 rebounds. He really was the key to them offensively and gave him a chance to actually win this game.
I also thought Derek White, like, he struggled a bit. He had a real nice game for the Celtics. They're just getting, like, they're getting those contributions from, like, their guys. They have their 8 guys, essentially, who all play really tough. Like, they're going to be kicking themselves because they were this close in the game. But, like, this series is so good. I still feel like the Celtics are going to win it. I definitely think they're going to win game 4. I feel like this is like, destined to be tied 2 games apiece after
Monday
night.
Yeah, I'm just not going to bet against Giannis anymore. Watching him Eurostep through the best defense in the league is almost untouched.
Oh, We haven't even said. I mean, Giannis drops 40
yeah.
on this like unbelievable defense. He's an unstoppable force. He's so good. He's so incredible. Referees, keep doing what you're doing. I have no notes. The guy's awesome. I enjoyed this series so much.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill, you might win some, but you just lost one trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
I guess Ja did tweet, broke the code with a video of that in response to that.
We got another game on Monday.
And in what should be the most enjoyable series, things have kind of gone off the rails. Number one, let's talk about the game, because the Golden State Warriors offense is clicking. And they beat the Memphis Grizzlies 142-112. And honestly, Keith, don't know if it was that close.
It was weird where they were up by the Warriors were up by 7 at halftime and it felt like a blowout because they made 70% of their shots in the first half. And I'm sitting there watching there from a Grizzlies fan perspective being like, yeah, Ja made a half court shot. We're down 7, but this team hopefully is not going to shoot 70% the whole game. Whoops. They kind of did. I think they finished 64% for the game. They dropped 78 in the second half after shooting 70% in the first half. Yeah. The offense was clicking on all cylinders. The Grizzlies, I mean, they were shorthanded. They were, in fact, missing their best perimeter defender in Dillon Brooks. They rolled with Xavier Tillman starting once again. But yeah, they could not keep any Warriors player in front of them. And then the Warriors made over 50% of their threes. Steph, Clay, Jordan Poole, Otto Porter, Wiggins.
Yeah, Steph Curry had 30 points, 14 of 14 from the free throw line. Jordan Poole with 27 off the bench, 21 for Clay Thompson. Draymond Green had 8 assists in this game. And again, man, the offense for the Warriors, when it's doing this, including a little Jordan Poole, Steph Curry, do-si-do, swing your partner round and round in the paint to get an open three-pointer. Yeah. I mean, there's just not much you can do, and especially if you're shorthanded like Memphis was for this game. But the big story that to come out of this game is that Ja Morant is right now questionable for game 4 due to a knee injury. And listen, he says that he got hurt on a play that Jordan Poole was making on the ball, and Jordan Poole grabs his knee. And Ja says that's the play that he gets hurt on. I don't know how anyone, Keith, could think that was intentional or dirty or anything of that nature. But the Memphis Grizzlies seem to disagree.
Yeah, it's this entire series has put everyone in such a weird state. I know, like, I cover the Grizzlies, and I'm getting all this, like, it's a weird energy where you have to, first of all, look at things in slow motion and determine intent. It's impossible. Everything in slow-mo is so strange. We don't know what's going on. But, like, everyone agrees. Grizzlies people agree. Like, the Dillon Brooks flagrant 2 was not a good play. That's a bad look. No one endorses that. That's not how the Grizzlies play. And so, like, people have become defensive about that. But then now this new play is weird where like Morant is actually doubtful. He's officially doubtful for game 4 on Monday. He says it was because of this play where Jordan Poole like pulls his leg. So now we're stuck with like, well, he's not going to play apparently. So something happened. He's saying this was the moment. And now everyone has to go to become like internet detectives and say, that isn't what happened. I have no idea. I just know like this entire series has like a weird energy. It went from super fun to now being like Taylor Jenkins saying he was almost defensive saying, I'm just speaking fact. Ja Morant says he was hurt on this play. Our medical staff agrees he was hurt on this play. And now, like, internet sleuthing is everyone saying he wasn't hurt. All we do know, he is hurt. We know he's hurt. We don't think Poole did this on purpose. I certainly don't think that. It was just kind of a freak play. And now this other injury has added this, like, this pall over this series again, where we just want to enjoy the basketball. The games were so enjoyable, you know, outside of the Warriors trouncing the Grizzlies in game three. There's so many amazing highlights. Like, we wish we could get back to that, but now the Grizzlies are kind of on the ropes.
The league took a look at the play. They're not handing out any sort of punishment, and I think that's the right call. Listen, man, it's a basketball game. These guys are going to run into each other. They're going to hit each other in the head. Sometimes you're going to grab a body part. And if that is when Ja got hurt, which, hey man, that's Ja's kind of been dealing with some knee trouble for a while, so we don't know.
He's had some knee issues.
But if that's when he got hurt, hey, that happens. Not everything. You don't need to point fingers at everything. Not everything is something to blame on someone else. I just think stuff happens. And it stinks to see this series kind of stuck in the mud a little bit. And now if Ja's out, man, it kind of feels like, man, this is a wrap for Memphis.
Yeah, it really could. I mean, everyone's going to cite, they're going to bring up the success the Grizzlies had in the regular season without Ja Morant. I mean, the playoffs are a different beast, and the playoffs, like, the Warriors' whole defense was basically, they actually adjusted. That was a big storyline from game three, that they actually threw some zone out there. They clogged the paint. They said, listen, we're not going to let Ja keep getting to the rim. Guess what? Ja kept getting to the rim. It was every other Grizzlies player who really struggled. So now if Ja's not there, like, Tyus Jones, he's 2-for-18 from the field in the series. Like, that's not going to get it done. He's got to step up. We know he's done in the regular season, but repeating myself, the playoffs are a different beast. Dylan Brooks will be back, and he is kind of like the ooze from Ghostbuster 2. If you boo him, it gives him power, and they're going to boo him powerfully. So it'll be interesting to see if he can step up in game four, but, like, yeah, no Ja Morant. That's a tough ask. The guy been averaging 38 points per game in this series. The guy been making 4.3 threes per game. He'd been playing at an incredible level. No one wants to see him not out there. And so, like, that, I think all NBA fans lose. But yeah, definitely the Warriors are in a position of power right now, and the Grizzlies are gonna be fighting for their lives.
Yeah. Well, that's gonna do it for today's show, folks. Hope you guys have a great start to your week. Keith, let's get out of here.
Ding, ding.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.